All right, good evening. Tuesday evening Bible study on the book of Acts. This will be our last one for this springtime, and then we'll pick up again in the fall. We're going to go through the first half of chapter 18. So yes, it kind of feels like we're stopping in the middle of a chapter, which we are, except that it is a breaking point because it'll be the end of Paul's second missionary journey. And then he goes back to his home church in Antioch, and then we'll hear about him starting his third missionary journey. That'll be in the fall when we pick up with the second half of chapter 18. So I'm just going to get through the first part here. Chapter 18, verse 1. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. All right, so first of all, you remember, he's on his second missionary journey. He had gone down to Athens by boat. He talked to the philosophers. We talked about that, the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers. He was on Mars Hill, and he proclaimed, "Let me talk to you about this unknown God." There were some converts, but also some that were uncertain. They weren't as hostile to him as the Jews in Thessalonica. Nonetheless, he stayed there for probably some few weeks, a month, 2 months, and then that's where that chapter 18 picks up here. So he left Athens and went to Corinth. Now, they're not that far apart. When we were there in our trip to Greece just recently, it was like an hour bus ride. So I imagine if you were walking or on horseback or on a donkey, you could get there in one day. Okay? And so I want to start by just showing you a couple of pictures, just four or five that I have. So, first of all, this is one of the pictures of the ruins. Can you see that okay? You want me to turn the lights off in the front? No? Okay. So this is the main marketplace through Corinth. These are modern buildings in the background on the edge of it. But this is where the agora was, so the marketplace, and these would have been like stalls on both sides where merchants would be selling their food, their produce, their fabrics, their, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so that road that we're walking on right there, that's our group right in front of us. You can recognize some of them. There's Denny Kern, for instance, right there. That road dates back to the time of Paul. So we can say with a fair amount of certainty that Paul walked on that road. So there were about four or five spots on this trip where we were walking on a road that actually dates to ancient times. And so, you know, the guide can say, yeah, Paul would have walked down here. So that's part of it. Corinth is on this little isthmus. You know what an isthmus is? Yeah, it sounds like I'm lifting. So there's the mainland of Greece above. You know what? Let me see if I got it. I can show a little map here. Let's see if it's on this right here. Yeah, there we go. So let me zoom in a little bit. Well, I don't know if you can kind of see it. This is the map from the Lutheran Study Bible. So this is mainland Greece. This is Macedonia up here, which is now part of Greece, but back then it wasn't. Mainland Greece here, and then the water comes in on this side from the Aegean Sea, and on this side from the Ionian Sea, and there's about 3.5 miles of land that separates the two. And then this is called the Peloponnese Peninsula, which comes into play in a lot of ancient Greek history, because Sparta was here, and Athens was here, and they fought. Those two were, when they were first growing and developing, Sparta and Athens were enemies of each other. And Corinth is right on that isthmus. So what would happen is, merchants or traders who are coming from this area, and they're trying to get around over into this area, from the northern Aegean Sea over to the northern Ionian Sea, they would rather not go out here. Not only because in their ships, in their boats, it would take an extra week or two to do that, so they'd lose a little bit of time, but also you're out in the open Mediterranean down here, so you have less protection. So they would come in here and dock, and then they would hire Corinthian laborers who would unload the boat, put it all on wagons, take it the 3.5 miles to the other side, load on another boat, and they can go off. and you can cut a lot of time, and as well as it's a safer journey, because you're close to land, you're protected from the open Mediterranean and the storms that would be there. So an isthmus is that little strip of land that connects two other bodies of land. Okay? Everybody with me? Because of all that, Corinth was a very worldly city. It had a lot of different cultures that were meshed together. It was fairly wealthy because it was a trade center. Trade that would go from the Peloponnese Peninsula north, and from the north to the south would go through there on the land bridge. But then also east-west trade on the sea and the ocean. Apparently, it was so well used that after the time of Paul, later on, a Roman governor commissioned a railroad to be built. Not with an engine like we think of today, but they had rails with carts on the rails, so that would make it easier to transport. Once you'd unload a ship on this side, transport, just haul it across with, mules probably, and then load it on the other side. It would make the process a lot faster and easier. So Corinth was a mix of a lot of different cultures. Okay? So, here we go. Let me show you this picture. This is a modern day canal, the Corinthian Canal. So you're looking the length of 3.5 miles. So they cut this channel in there back in the middle of the 20th century so that freighters could go through here without having to go all the way around. So again, it would cut some time off. And while we were there was a freighter going through, and I think it had a tug. And, you know, this looks pretty narrow. That freighter must have had maybe 5 or 6 feet, gap on either side. That was it. And they're going fairly slow, but, they're getting through there. So it was kind of amazing seeing that go through. Over this canal, in the modern day times, there's only like 3 bridges. I want to show you this next one because this is kind of interesting. So one of the bridges that we had to cross, I have never heard of this or seen this. This is a bridge that goes down underwater. So we were on this side, which is where the ruins are, the archaeological site. So we were over here, and that's the restaurant we were going to for lunch. So our bus parked over here, and then a freighter had just gone through. I should have taken a picture of it. A number of other people did, and so some of them sent me their picture. So the freighter goes through, and now we're waiting for the bridge to come back up. It goes down about 20 feet so that things can pass over top of it. Have you ever heard of that? I've never heard of that. So let me show you another picture with the bridge almost up. So there it is. It's just a little bit, it was still coming up, all soaking wet, the water's running off. It's made out of steel and wood. I'm sure the wood is womanized, but nevertheless, I'm thinking, they got to replace that or inspect it pretty regularly. So once it got all the way up, there was two-lane traffic, and in the middle was the walkway for pedestrians. So we walked down the middle here, and then we crossed, and we went to that restaurant for our lunch. Okay?
How much warning do they give you before they lower it?
There was kind of some kind of bell. Okay. You knew when it was going down and coming up. Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's not a fishing bridge.
Yeah. Right. And then just one more picture to show you of Corinth. So this is some of the broader area of Corinth. That previous picture that I showed you, that was the main street, the marketplace with the agora. That would have been 90 degrees from where we're standing right here. So this is like a 90 degree turn. And so this was some of the city area where residential places were. And under that tree right there on those rocks, we had communion. It was a Sunday. And since St. Paul talked to Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 10 and 11 about the proper use of the Lord's Supper, so I read those passages and we had a little communion service right there. Which was kind of interesting because our guide said, well, see that church over there? That's a Greek Orthodox church. And they control this whole area. and you're supposed to have their permission before you do a church service. And I said, oh, should we do this? She said, yeah, go ahead, but just kind of be quiet. And I said, well, I had brought four hymns with me in the little bulletin. We were going to sing some hymns. Well, just sing softly. So we sang one hymn kind of in low tones, and she said, ah, they're not paying attention. They don't even see us over here. Go ahead and sing the rest of your hymns. Well, you know, Lutherans are, we're all Christians, right?
Yes.
Although if there had been some priest from the Greek Orthodox Church come over, I wouldn't have been able to understand him unless he spoke English, so I don't know. All right, any questions about that? Just a little bit of show and tell. Okay, back to our text. So Paul arrives in Corinth, and there's a Jew there named Aquila and his wife Priscilla. Now, according to history, there was a time, let me see if I can find it in my notes, Emperor Claudius, right about this time. So there's some Roman history here that we can tie into, so that makes us know what time this is. Emperor Claudius kicked all the Jews out of Rome because they were arguing about Crestus. Part of this, what I'm telling you, is in the footnote of the Lutheran Study Bible. Crestus, which is a variation of Christ. So the Jews were arguing about this. Crestus, is he the Messiah or not? And they were creating enough of an uproar that Emperor Claudius at that point had it up to here with these Jews. Get out, all of you. Leave Rome or else, you know, we'll arrest you. So two of them, Aquila and Priscilla, migrated over to Corinth, where we are now. So that would have been across the Ionian Sea from Italy. I find it interesting that they called it Italy all the way back then. Remember, this is Luke writing the book of Acts. And this is about late first century. And he says Italy right there. So that's Claudius, who commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. And he went to see them. He, Paul, went to see these two, Aquila and Priscilla. And because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked. For they were tent makers by trade. How often do you come across somebody, a neighbor or an acquaintance or just somebody at the restaurant or wherever, and they're in the same line of work as you? Well, it gives you an instant conversation piece, right? And in this case, we do know Paul supported himself throughout his missionary journeys. Any offerings he received, he would take back to people at Jerusalem who they were suffering under a drought. So he worked and supported himself by making tents. So these two were tent makers as well. So they probably worked together for a little while. Verse 4. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and tried to persuade Jews and Greeks. So remember, this is Paul's regular process. He would go to the synagogue first. The Jews would know about the true God. The Jews would know that there's a Messiah coming. So some of the foundation is already laid. He would have to talk about those foundational matters with pagans, but with Jews he didn't. So he tried to persuade Jews and Greeks. Remember, every place he goes, there are some Gentiles who have joined in the synagogue because they recognize that the Jewish God is the true God. But they don't go so far as to convert and become Jews. We've been seeing that all throughout Acts, haven't we? So there's some Greeks in the synagogues. All right, so he's there for a number of Sabbaths trying to convince them. When Silas and Timothy arrived from Macedonia, Paul was occupied with the word, testifying to the Jews that the Christ was Jesus. So first of all, remember when he was in Athens, he sent word back to Berea, where he came from, to say, tell Silas and Timothy, this is where I went to, so that they can come find me. Well, by the time they get down to Athens, he's already over in Corinth. So probably some of the believers that formed the first church there in Athens probably told him, oh yeah, he was here for a few weeks, but now he went that way. West, go west, young man, to Corinth. So they arrive, and here he is on these successive Sabbaths, trying to convince the Jews that the Christ, the Messiah, Christ the name for a Messiah, title for Messiah, was Jesus. And when they opposed and reviled him, he shook out his garments and said to them, "Your blood be on your own heads. I am innocent. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles." Now, he still goes and talks to Jews on the future trip, but this is kind of the end of him talking to Jews on this trip, and especially here in Corinth. He's not going to talk to the Jews anymore. He's going to talk to the Gentiles. Your blood be on your own heads. So I've told you, Paul's attitude here is, I've told you who the Christ is. Now, if you're not going to believe me, and I've given you many proofs, and I've related some history and tied it in with the prophecies, no doubt he knew the scriptures well. Scriptures at this point still being only the Old Testament. And they start to oppose him and revile him. So he says, all right, enough, I'm leaving. Verse 7. And he left there and went to the house of a man named Titius Justus, a worshiper of God. His house was next door to the synagogue. Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed in the Lord, together with his entire household. And many of the Corinthians, hearing Paul, believed and were baptized. So I almost get a little sense here that Paul is a little short-tempered. Maybe he's tired of all of the revilement that he's gotten at various places. Because he says, all right, enough of you Jews here in this synagogue. I'm leaving. I'm just going to go talk to the Gentiles. And yet, here we have this, there's a Greek, Titius Justus. Actually, it's a Roman name. He lives right next door to the synagogue. And he believes. Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believes. He's converted. And many of the Corinthians. So there was some success here. And yet Paul is just like, he's given up and leaving, and I'm going to go elsewhere. Elsewhere within the city. He's not leaving Corinth yet. Many of the Corinthians hearing Paul believed and were baptized. Okay. So again, the gospel brings with it both success and conflict. Verse 9. And the Lord said to Paul one night in a vision, "Do not be afraid, but go on speaking. And do not be silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you to harm you, for I have many in this city who are my people." And he stayed a year and 6 months teaching the word of God among them. This is the longest he's stayed in any one place so far. It won't end up being. He'll end up being 3 years in Ephesus, but the longest he's stayed anywhere so far. And so it took God's doing. You know, he's kind of frustrated. He's done with them. He's probably been there a month maybe or something. And so now he's ready to like, okay, I'm done with the Jews. I'm just going to go talk to the Gentiles. And it says one night in a vision. So I interpret that as a dream. Although technically a vision is a waking dream, but you know, it's at night. So maybe it wasn't a vision. Maybe it was a dream. And God says to him, no, stay here. Keep preaching. You're doing a good job, Paul. Okay. All right, let me pause a minute. Any questions or comments so far?
Pastor?
Yeah.
When Claudius threw the Jews out of Rome,
yeah,
the determined, I read or a history somewhere, it was Latin, of course, it was a Claudius dispersion or something.
Yeah, okay. There is. There is some name for it.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Okay.
But yes, there was a name for it.
Good. I remember it too.
Yeah, there you go.
So, but it wasn't like throw in jail, was it? Didn't they have so many days to leave or be put to death?
I think so, yes. I think that's correct.
Easy decision.
Yeah, easy decision. Okay, we're getting out of town.
Okay.
By the way, I just noticed in my notes something to point out to you. Verse 11, he stayed a year and 6 months teaching the word of God among them. Now he's teaching with the Gentiles. He's abandoned the synagogue, although some of the Jews have converted, and so now he's basically started a church. Also, during this year and 6 months, we know, both from early church history and from reading the epistles, this is when he wrote 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. The first two letters he wrote. Okay? So this is the first books of the New Testament, actually. All right. So, and remember, he was just, it was maybe, well, a year and a half plus another number of months. So we'll call it 2 years prior to this, that he was in Thessalonica. And again, had some converts there and started a small church, but then some of the Jews got upset with him and drove him out. So it was about 2 years removed, and he's writing letters to the Thessalonians. Okay? Yeah, Jeannie, did you have your hand up?
Back a few verses it says that he shook his clothes off against them.
Yeah.
Can you explain that custom?
Well, that's like to say, remember Jesus told his disciples when they went to a town to proclaim the kingdom of God is near, and if they don't receive you, shake the dust off your sandals. It's a figurative speech. Now, maybe they literally would shake the dust off their sandals, or here maybe Paul actually took his cloak off and shook it off, so they may have physically done it, but it's more of a figure of speech to say, I'm leaving the dust and dirt of me behind on you, because you're rejecting what I'm saying, so I'm leaving you behind and I'm going on to the next place. So it was kind of a rejection. A sign of, I'm rejecting you since you've rejected me.
I used to have a poster banner way back in the day that said, if you're getting run out of town by an angry crowd, get in front and make it look like a parade.
Yeah, that's a good poster. Sure. Well, if you're getting run out of town by an angry mob, you're probably in front because you're running away.
Yeah.
All right. So he writes 2 Thessalonians. He's there a year and 6 months. All right. Next little bit here. This is our last paragraph for now. But when Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, the Jews made a united attack on Paul and brought him before the tribunal. So first of all, everything seemed to be settled for a year and a half. Paul is over there talking to the Gentiles, a few Jews that joined him. The Jews are still over here in the synagogue, and things seem to be at a neutral standstill. Again, Gallio, proconsul of Achaia, that places this on Roman history. Achaia is the northern province of the Peloponnese Peninsula. So the Romans were highly organized in their government and in their military. So the proconsul, it'd be much like Pontius Pilate was governor. Proconsul is similar to a governor. I don't know, one ranked higher than the other. And so this gives us a time frame. And the Jews are getting upset again. Something got them upset. We don't know what. So they get all stirred up. They join together. And they make a united attack on Paul. And they drag him before the tribunal saying, verse 13, this man is persuading people to worship God contrary to the law. Now at this point in time, the Roman government had recognized Judaism as a legal religion. Okay? So if you're a Jew, you can keep practicing your religion as long as you pay taxes and obey our laws. We'll allow that. So the Jews are using that here against Paul to say, Paul is practicing an illegal religion. A religion that's not recognized by the Roman government. That's what they're saying. Worship God contrary to the law. Verse 14. But when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, if it were a matter of wrongdoing or vicious crime, O Jews, I would have reason to accept your complaint. But since it is a matter of questions about words and names and your own law, see to it yourselves. I refuse to be a judge of these things. So we know this also from Roman history, some of what I read about. For a while, the Roman government viewed Christianity as an offshoot of Judaism, which actually is kind of true. We are an offshoot of Judaism. But they viewed it, the Roman government officially, for a period of time, viewed it as those Christians and Jews, they're just kind of a difference of opinion, but they're in the same religion. Not quite true, but there is some truth in there. So that's Gallio's point here. Well, it's a matter about words. Who's the Christ or who's not? Or, you know, is Jesus God or whatever? It's this, you guys are arguing about words and names within your own religion. I'm going to have nothing to do with this. He washes his hands of it. Okay? I refuse to be a judge of these things. You know, that's actually a pretty good position. You know, technically that's the position of our government, right?
Maybe.
He might have known about Pontius Pilate, sure. All right, verse 16. And he drove them from the tribunal. So the tribunal is probably a government building where, you know, the city hall, if you will, or whatever. He shoos them out. He pushes, you know, has them driven out. Verse 17. This is a little puzzling. So this is right about where we're going to end, by the way. And they all seized Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue, and beat him in front of the tribunal. But Gallio paid no attention to any of this. Now here's the question. So it's been a year and a half. Sosthenes is the new ruler of the synagogue. Remember the previous one? What was his name?
Crispus,
yes. And Crispus became a Christian, became a believer. He believed in the Lord, it says, right there in verse 8. So they have a new Jewish leader of the synagogue. His name is Sosthenes. Interesting, it's a Greek name. Now, a lot of Jews would take Greek names for interacting with the Greek culture. So that he still was, he was a Jew. He wouldn't have, they wouldn't have allowed him to be leader of the synagogue. Here's the question for you though. Kind of a last little point of discussion. Who is the they? Verse 17. And they all seized Sosthenes and beat him. And Gallio was good to his word and did nothing. He ignored them. The Roman proconsul. Okay? So who is they? Well, one thought is, it's Greeks who are upset with Jews. Oh, these Jews, you know, they got kicked out of Rome, now they come over here, and now they're causing a problem, and they're stirring up more trouble in front of the proconsul and using up government time and wasting our time. So this is Greeks who are upset with the Jews for making this happen. A second thought is, it's Jews who are mad at their own ruler. Sosthenes, what are you doing? You're causing a problem here for all of us. You're getting the proconsul to be mad at all of us. The third thought is that it's Christians who are trying to pay back Sosthenes for trying to get them in trouble. Okay? So who is this they? I don't have an answer. The commentary I read didn't have an answer. I doubt personally that it's Christians. Because if this were Christians, we would have heard something about, and Paul chastised the people for, you know, for beating up Sosthenes in front of the Roman proconsul. Paul would have said something, I think, if this were Christians. So I think this is either Jews beating up their own ruler because they're mad at him, or this is Greeks beating up the Jewish ruler because they're mad at the Jews. Okay?
Well, the study Bible says or both.
Yeah, or both. Yeah, right. Right. Maybe it was both. I forgot. So that's... can you read that note for me?
Yeah. It says, they, either Greeks showing their anti-Semitism or Jews venting their frustration or perhaps both.
Yeah, okay. Well, all right. That's kind of what I... that's much more succinct. I should have just read that read instead of my verbiage that I... Yeah, Jeannie?
Well, here in the there's a word for all. And they all...
So maybe it was a combination of Jews who were mad and Greeks who were mad, and they all took out their frustration on Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue. So he gets beat up in front of the tribunal. I guess at least he wasn't killed. All right. Verse 18. After this, Paul stayed many days longer and then took leave of the brothers and set sail for Syria. That's where Antioch is, his home church. And with him, Priscilla and Aquila. At Centre, he had cut his hair, for he was under a vow. Okay? So that's really the end of the second missionary journey. They do make a stop in Ephesus, which we'll cover next week, next fall. They make a stop in Ephesus, and then they continue on to Antioch in Syria. So probably the reason they stopped in Ephesus is because by departing Centre, that's a port right near Corinth on the Aegean Sea, and they could probably only find passage across the Aegean Sea to Ephesus. Ephesus, being a major city, would have boats that were coming and going from everywhere, so you could get passage to wherever you wanted to. When we were on our Greek trip, as we were going to that restaurant where that bridge is that goes down that I was showing you, we were driving on the bus, and the guy had the bus driver stop, and we looked around, and there's this field there, and here's the road, and about 20 feet that way is the Aegean Sea, the water, and there was weeds and reeds growing up, and the driver said, if you remember your book of Acts, this is Centre. So it had been, at some point, completely destroyed, and there was nothing there. But at the time of Paul, it was a small port village that would have boats coming and going. And it says he cut his hair, for he was under a vow, probably a Nazarite vow. Remember, John the Baptist was a Nazarite. So the Nazarite vow for the Jews would be that you would not cut your hair, nor would you drink alcohol. Remember, Samson was a Nazarite. So when he cut his hair, that was breaking his vow, and that's why he lost his strength. So same thing with John the Baptist. So now here, Paul is probably, the time of his vow is over. So he can finally cut his hair. His vow has been completed. We'll talk more about that when we pick up again in the fall. But this is kind of the end of the second missionary journey. And then Paul sets sail for his home church, Antioch in Syria. Okay? Any questions? No.
That's out of respect for you, so you can go.
Oh. Yeah, there's a cold one waiting for me, I'm sure.
Already drank it.
No. Jill already drank my beer? Yeah.
Nothing about this today, but did you hear about Bible class on Sunday morning?
No.
Jeopardy. Bible Jeopardy.
Oh, really? Was that Pastor Q?
Yeah.
Oh. Did you win?
No, I didn't win. No, I'll tell you who won. Terry.
Yeah.
Terry Gerken would have been.
Yeah,
won.
She won.
Oh, did she? Okay.
But it was a lot of fun.
Well, all right.
We did single Jeopardy. We didn't go on to
You didn't go to double Jeopardy. Okay,
no.
All right, good. I told him, I said to, he knows the congregation better than I do. He's been here a lot longer. I said, do whatever you want for Sunday Bible study. You know, open door, whatever you like. Well, I didn't realize he was going to do Jeopardy. I hadn't heard that.
Jeopardy was the first half, and then what can you do?
Did you do Bible baseball, too?
No. I can't think of what. Didn't everybody short?
All right.
Anyway, I think people enjoyed it.
Yeah, all right.
Something different.
Well, thank you all for being here all year long. And so we'll take a break on Tuesday nights, and the Wednesday morning class will continue with 1 Corinthians during the summer. And then we'll pick up again after Labor Day. Okay, and we'll probably be able to finish Acts by Thanksgiving or Christmas, somewhere in there. Because we only have about 6 chapters left. Okay, 8 chapters. So.
We did the church year with the rest of the class.
Oh, the church year. Okay, good. Oh, that's always good. Yeah. All right. Let's rise and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thanks for coming, everyone. Have a good summer. Although I'll still see you.
Yes.